Are you wanting to live a life with more clarity and happiness? I'm Tammy Hill, a licensed marriage and family therapist, certified sex educator, wife, mother, and grandmother. I am also an optimist. I strive to live my life on purpose, with purpose. I'm here to inspire people to do the things that inspire them. Live your why means to align your core values with the way you want to spend your time. Living my why includes bridging the gap of understanding sex as both a sacred marital act and as pleasurable, passionate energy that adds zest and happiness to life. I want you to embrace sexual joy without shame. Integrating your sexual nature for goodness will bring you strength, joy, and peace. Join me this season for the Live Your Why podcast, and together we can live a life full of passion and purpose. Hi, this is Tammy Hill, and this is the Live Your Why podcast. We learned several years ago that more than 50% of the adults who are members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints are single. It is tough being single and sexual. Today, I've invited my colleague, Dr. Dean Busby, to come on the show and talk a little bit about masturbation. Understanding masturbation. If you are a parent, if you are a leader, if you are human, this is the podcast for you. Make sure to tune in today and listen to the Live Your Why podcast. Hi, this is Tammy Hill, and this is the Live Your Why podcast. I'm very excited today to have my guest, Dr. Dean Busby, on the show. Dean is a professor in the School of Family Life at BYU. He teaches the Healthy Sexuality in Marriage class and also does a lot of research around sexuality. And I've asked him to come on today to have a conversation around masturbation, particularly how we can understand masturbation as members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm really looking forward to this interview. Dean, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Glad to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself as we get started and what led you to study marriage and family therapy and research sexuality? Why is this such a passion for you?
Well, you know, I've always been interested in relationships. Since I was in high school, actually, I was interested in psychology and how people sort of think and act and interact. And when I went to college, I didn't even know the field of family therapy existed. I got a psychology undergraduate degree and just happened to go by a bulletin board one day and see marriage and family therapy, and had been a little bit frustrated with the psychology degree in the sense that it was so internally focused, you know, what goes on inside of the mind of an individual and such. And I was, again, more interested in relationships. How do people get along or not get along? And so I saw that and made some contacts and, long story short, got into the family therapy PhD program. And, you know, initially in my research and teaching in family therapy, I was, you know, more focused on sort of standard couple therapy and looking at, you know, how couples communicate. Didn't find a lot, frankly, in the communication research that was very unique to marriage. The things that we do to communicate well with our marriage partners are the same things we do with friends and other people. And there wasn't any real unique character to that. So I thought, well, maybe it's the conflict. Maybe it's the way couples fight. Because I notice, of course, as I'm sure you and other practitioners notice, how fast couples can go down those high conflict roads. And they seem to really have buttons that are very easy to push for one another. And so I studied conflict for a while instead of communication, and still study conflict on occasion. I write an article or so about it every now and then. And it was a little more interesting than standard communication, certainly more energy, but again, not unique to marriage. We get in fights with all kinds of people that we're not married to, and it's the same patterns of conflict and same principles work. And so I kept asking myself, what is it about marriage that is uniquely powerful, what defines marriage and makes it a different relationship than all is. And so obviously the question I landed on was, the issue was sexuality, that the thing that we're supposed to uniquely preserve and experience and have opportunities to share is sexuality in marriage that is separate from our other relationships. And in many ways, frankly, I've learned that sexuality is such an interesting topic, and most people don't talk about sexuality. Lots of people fight about sexuality, though. So the conflict stuff that I did applied easily to sexuality. And I think a lot of the underlying benefits that we have in marriage and strengths and such do come from that physical connection when it works well. And then when it doesn't, it can be sort of a primary reason that many couples just aren't making it. And so it's been a very rewarding shift. I shifted probably about 15 years ago over to sexuality, probably never go back to other main topics. It's just such a raw area for study still. Frankly, most of the studies coming out of sexuality are still individually focused. They're looking at how individuals respond to sexual stimuli or how they think about it or what their individual non-committed experiences with sex are like, et cetera. And so the couple area of studying sexuality, strangely enough, is one of the understudied areas. And there's, you know, way more stuff out there now about alternative lifestyles and alternative ways of being sexual than there is about couple sexuality. So it feels like the need is tremendous still, and that there's way more than I can ever accomplish in the rest of my career. So I'm having a blast working in that area.
That's awesome. Is there anything that you're researching right now that's particularly exciting for you?
Hormones. I kept sensing, hearing, thinking about how hormones are so integral to sexual feelings, attitudes, functioning. And then when I would go to the literature, finding very, very little. Mm-hmm. There's just not much out there about hormones. And so we're launching a study, hopefully this fall, on measuring the hormones and how they relate to sexual experiences, how they shift, how they explain some different groupings of couples. And so these are hormones like oxytocin, testosterone, estrogen. There's just so little that we know about how they interact across couples. So we're interested in the couple dynamics. And so that's the thing I'm super excited about right now is, wouldn't it be neat to have a text you could say, your hormones and your sexuality, where is that text? It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So that's what we're hoping to get to.
Fascinating. There's a book called You Are Not Broken by Dr. Kelly Casperson. She published it just last year, and she has one chapter on menopause and hormones and sexuality that, my goodness, was so eye-opening to me. I'm excited for this research. That sounds wonderful. Okay, so today we're going to talk a little bit about masturbation. And this, as you know, is kind of a hot topic. It's one that, as you teach at BYU, it's a little bit of a tightrope talking about it. And yet students will often ask questions about masturbation. And I'm curious first, maybe if you can define masturbation, and then maybe why are there so many extreme beliefs around the idea of masturbation within our church culture?
It's great questions, and it's a good topic. It is a topic where there's a lot of confusion, misunderstandings, overreactions, underreactions. It's really a confusing topic. So, I define it very, very broadly, and there's a variety of reasons that I do that. I say anything that you do that stimulates your own sexual response is masturbation. So that can be anything from reading something to thinking about things to touching your own body, et cetera. You know, typically the definition of masturbation has been physical manipulation of your genitals. Mm-hmm. That's the typical definition. But I go much broader than that, because for me, what is important is that everybody understand that this idea of self-stimulation is something everybody experiences to one degree or another. Because our sexual appetites are not necessarily tied to just an individual, they're generic, And lots of things can stimulate those appetites and that arousal process in us. And so getting people to just sort of think, okay, you know, so all of us have at some level or another masturbated in the sense of stimulating our own sexual arousal to one degree or another. It may not reach high levels of arousal for some people. It may regularly reach those levels for others. And so then the question is, how do we think about that? What do we do about it? What, you know, where do we go with this potential to stimulate your own arousal system? And how should we even think about that?
Mm-hmm. So let me just clarify then for you, the definition includes like, so even if you're reading material that is sexually arousing to you, and maybe you're reading something so that you can kind of get in the mood to be with your spouse a little later in the day, that's something that you would consider masturbation because you're arousing yourself.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily mean that that means you're sinning with that okay. scenario that you just, but it is self-stimulation. Mm-hmm. And so there's this continuum, right? From very, very mild things to, again, you know, physically stimulating yourself to orgasm. That's the sort of the other end of the continuum. So we're all on that continuum somewhere. Mm-hmm. And we all have to deal with the fact that things that we can do can stimulate our arousal process. Should we do that? It depends on the circumstance. Mm-hmm. It depends on the scenario. Well, hopefully we'll talk through some of that.
Well, I'd like to talk about that. So we've got this continuum from over here, maybe something more mild of thinking. Maybe you're thinking about something sexual or watching something that is arousing, maybe on TV, to here on this end of the spectrum, actually physically bringing yourself to orgasm. Where is and let's put our spirituality in realm with that, because we are our own sexual stewards. We are meant to manage our sexuality. How do you determine where this becomes okay and where it's not okay?
Yeah. Well, I think you first have to answer the question, what is the purpose of sexuality?
Good question.
Like, why are we sexual beings? And I think there's really two central purposes, or there's several, but beyond two. And so one is to the purpose of our sexual system is to attract us to others, to get us to risk and get in relationships. We call that the mating system. Mm-hmm. And so that's what drives us to date. That's what drives us to be interested in others, to, you know, take some risk and get to know people when maybe we're introverted, et cetera. And so the purpose of those sexual feelings are to push us towards other people. The other purpose is to bond with people that we are in a relationship with. And so to strengthen that relationship and to get a solid bond so that it will endure across time. And so you can see that both of those, the mating system and the bonding system, they're both relationally oriented. Mm-hmm. Their point is to get us in relationships and to keep us in relationships. And of course, there's the reproductive purpose, but I connect that to those other two. It's just another part of the mating and the bonding system. It's to also reproduce. And so when we stimulate ourselves, if the purpose of that stimulation is not to move towards relationships, for sure it's acting contrary to these fundamental purposes of our sexuality, and in my view, are not necessarily going to help you have a better sexual relationship with partners and hold together marriage, etc. So whether we say this is sinful or not, I mean, sin is a very loaded word, depending on the, so you, let's just say, for example, you have an adolescent who hasn't been taught much about sexuality, and they suddenly realize during some shower feeling that touching parts of their body is arousing, mm-hmm. right? And so they're starting to masturbate. In whatever degree of masturbation, you know, that however far that arousal leads isn't particularly relevant for this scenario. So if a parent hasn't taught the child, or somebody hasn't taught the child, okay, the point of your sexuality is to get you to engage with other people, to get in relationships and to keep those relationships, that child doesn't even know what's happening. They're just responding to a normal physical sensation, like you would respond to, I put something in my mouth and that tastes good or that doesn't taste good, right? So they touch a part of their body, it feels good. They keep touching that part of their body. So you can see how not knowing the point and the purposes of sexuality will set a child up to start manipulating their own body to greater and greater degrees of arousal. And they don't have an idea that that has potentially some future problems in reaching their goals in terms of what sexuality mm-hmm. is all for. So is that child sinning? Well, they're sinning unknowingly in the scenario that I've given to you. They're just touching their body, it feels good. They keep touching their body. And that is, frankly, the way most of the world that are not in a religious context think about masturbation, that it's an appetite like eating. It's not connected to the relational goals. Touching your body, doing whatever you want to your body in terms of arousal is perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. That's the way most people think about masturbation.
Right.
And most people engage in masturbation in and out of religious context, you know, whether or not they're religious. And so they do some level of self-stimulation. And so I don't know how important it is to sort of define, well, you're sinning here, you're not sinning there. Again, it's the point is, if you're learning that my sexuality is just for me to enjoy and self-stimulation is the way to enjoy it and it's the end point, then you can see the challenges that occur. Now you get older and you want to be in relationships, but your sexuality is an individual appetite in your head. And the way to experience that is through individual stimulation. Well, that's going to be, is going to create some barriers and difficulties that maybe don't need to be there. If you had had some good sex education and some good teaching with parents and learned about your body before you start stimulating it like that.
Mm-hmm. I love that answer. So we've got this continuum, and what you're saying is, what's the purpose behind the stimulation? And if it's directing this person towards a relationship, that's a good thing.
Right.
Right. And if it's all about me and my own pleasure and it doesn't matter, there's not consequences or it's just me, that's not particularly helpful or good.
Yeah. And so then I hesitate to say this part because there's some people that hear the word masturbation and it's so loaded.
Yes.
This is a terrible sin kind of stuff that they can't hear this part. But this is important because, so now let's say we're in a marriage and somebody's married to a partner and their sex drive is way lower than their partner's, right? And they have found that one of the ways they can engage better in sexuality and enjoy that is if they fantasize about sex with their partner. Right. So they're thinking about, okay, tonight's the night, we're going to have fun. And they start fantasizing about it. And that helps their body prepare for sexuality and stimulate those hormones that I'm starting to study now. That's, in my definition, that's the masturbation, right? They're starting to stimulate their own body. It can just be through thoughts and fantasy, or it can be touching, whatever they're doing, right? And so for me, that purpose is to enhance my sexual relationship with my partner, to get me prepared and in the mood. Otherwise, I'm not going to be a very good partner, et cetera. You can see the different context of that versus somebody who's married said, I'm not getting along with my spouse. I'm just going to do my sexuality on my own. That's very different, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have any way to build strength in the relationship and connect you to a partner. It's just individually experiencing sexuality separate from your partner. So in that regard, I don't want to call the fantasy and whatever they're doing to get themselves ready for sexuality with a partner masturbation for those people that freak out about that word.
Right.
But it's the same idea, right? It's self-stimulation and it gets their body primed and ready for their experience with their partner.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a couple of different scenarios you can hear that just have very different meanings because of the point of that activity.
Yeah, I really appreciate you describing this. It really clarifies for me so much about if this is building strength in a relationship, then it's probably okay, right? And not to get hung up on the idea that what you're reading or thinking, if you're moving towards your marriage, you're moving towards this relationship, and this is helpful for you to get kind of on board sexually, then that's something that probably would would not be considered sinful.
Right. And of course, we know that a lot of people who masturbate regularly, they pair it with things like porn,
right,
and people outside of their relationship. Right. You know, when you, these people, they don't have a relationship with at all. They're just images or videos or whatever they are. And you can see why, of course, that's more loaded in a negative way, mm-hmm, because now you're introducing into your sexual appetite system the idea that people outside of my marriage are the things that are going to stimulate my arousal system. And so in my mind, that is a more serious problem than, you know, if it's not paired with somebody outside of the marriage.
100%. I agree with that totally. So then how do you teach singles who, I guess we teach it this exact same way, but I'm curious if you're single and you're not masturbating to pornography or fantasy of other people, but you're, maybe you have a little bit, it relieves tension, you're able to test better or sleep better once in a while if you go ahead and masturbate to orgasm. And if you're thinking in your mind that someday I'm going to be able to share this in a relationship when I'm married, is that something that you feel like would be sinful?
Yeah. So when students ask me that type of a question, I know that we've finally gotten to a safe place. That's such a risky question,
yeah,
right? It's a difficult question for us to even admit that exists in our culture, that there are a lot of single people, they have sexual energy and sexual appetites, and they get very intense and they get very nervous and anxious. And some of them have used masturbation as a way to cope with that and sort of work with that and to relieve that tension. So, you know, I tell people, I mean, in the ideal world, we reserve our sexual arousal for marriage, right? And that's the way we want, that's our goal,
right,
is to get to the point where we experience that inside of marriage. And so, I would say, I don't know that that's the ideal, that there's a bunch of people relieving their sexual tension through masturbation. But I'd also say, you know, this is a difficult thing to manage. These are hard, difficult appetites to manage. So I don't feel constrained to come down on a really like, this is a terrible sin, you're ruining your life, that sort of thing. I think when we load it that heavily, we don't give people the opportunity to progress and to move forward and to learn to cope with their sexual feelings in without the guilt and the shame, mm-hmm, that are going to be probably worse problems than a masturbation problem, mm-hmm, right? If you bring into marriage this intense guilt and shame every time you feel some sexual arousal, then that's going to be way harder on your marriage than if there were some masturbation problems. Because what we know is it's developmentally natural for children, especially in religious contexts where they don't get taught about sexuality, to discover and explore their bodies and begin to masturbate before they figure out that this is something I want to start controlling. So I'm not that interested in layering this heavy guilt on these, mm-hmm, all these kids. It's, but once they become aware of the points of purposes of sexuality, then begin to help them redirect things, redirect attitudes and thoughts and feelings in different directions and try to cope with their sexual feelings in other ways. Have that sexual energy push them towards relationship. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing to me, is that you're lonely, right? When mm-hmm, you're not in a relationship, want to be in a relationship. And if you use that sexual energy to say, I need to be in a relationship, I need to move towards people, I need to interact with them. And as you engage and you're more social, some of those again, needs that you've been solving just on your own can find other ways of being solved that are leading toward marriage.
Mm-hmm. So neat. I love what you're saying. We're going to take a little break. And then, Dean, I want to come back. And you know that more than half of the church adult population is single. And mm-hmm, and we've talked a little bit about you can manage your sexuality by trying to move this towards a relationship. But are there other things that people can do to manage this aspect, their sexuality, when they are single? Hi, this is Tammy Hill, and I am so darn excited to tell you a little bit about a spring fling couples retreat that I'm planning. This is going to be a spring fling in Seattle. This will be May 17th through 19th, 2024. We're going to be staying at the beautiful Thompson Seattle, right there on Puget Sound, in the beautiful heart of the Emerald City. You will want to come to this retreat and learn a little bit more about making love techniques, connecting deeper and richer with your spouse, and of course, enjoying beautiful Seattle. Join me May 17th through 19th in this beautiful city. We're back today with Dr. Dean Busby talking a little bit about masturbation. And Dean, I have a question for you because we know that more than half of the adult population within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is single. And when we have so many people who are single, they are also sexual. And often we don't equate that, unfortunately, that single people can also have sexual feelings, but they do. What are some ideas you have for how to manage this sexual energy that you don't have a relationship to share it with?
Well, as I said, just as we ended the previous section, I think the first thing is to use those signals. The meaning that they should have for people is, I have a body that is designed to be with another person to experience sexuality. This energy needs to be pursued in that direction. That is what I need to do fundamentally with this energy, is to give me the courage to be social, to be engaged, to continue until I am in a permanent relationship, to try to get that permanent relationship. Now, that is not going to remove all the sexual feelings, of course, mm-hmm. right? So what we're learning about hormones, as an example, is when your highest point of hormonal energy that in terms of sex drive is for people who are in the courting and early marriage stage. We're talking about the months before marriage and the months right after. So a very short window, 6 months or so, is when the hormones, those estrogen and testosterone hormones, are the most intense. And guess what? When you get in a permanent relationship, they reduce. Mm-hmm. They come down. So you've achieved the purpose of those hormones, and then the oxytocin starts to get stronger. It kicks in stronger. So we're naturally set up, but if we don't listen to those, so let's say I'm a super introvert, and let's say that I don't want to get in relationships. And so I have all this energy and it's pushing me to get in relationships, but I'm afraid of mm-hmm. people. I don't like people, et cetera. And so I don't do anything with it. It's just going to build up that sexual tension and energy twice as strong. It's going to stay as strong as it can possibly be in my life until I act on it in a way that leads me towards that resolution in terms of marriage, in terms of a permanent relationship. So we just have to keep telling you the reason I feel these feelings is this. Now, the deeper question you're asking is it okay for a person who is permanently single? What are they supposed to do with their sexual feelings? And there's a lot of people who consistently try to be in relationships. It doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. They're not available spouses who believe like they do, and there's not a place and there's not a relationship, and they're going to stay single. Well, so this is hard. This is basically, we're going to have to feel this out in the terms of grief and loss, right? Mm-hmm. We have to, at some point, we have to say, there is a part of my life that I am not going to be able to experience. And that's that sexual bonding part, and that's the reproductive part. I'm not going to have children. Those are hard things to deal with. Mm-hmm. And you have to, at some point, accept that loss and deal with that loss. And at some level, you have to turn those feelings off. And it's hard. It's not easy. You just have to sort of, this part of my life has passed and isn't going to happen for me. And I mean, I don't know that the solution of, so now I'm a single person, I'm permanent, and so then masturbation is going to be the way to deal with those right. feelings, is necessarily going to help.
Right.
In some ways, it sort of dangles this, it keeps this energy, sexual energy, higher and keeps it going, even though the opportunity for an appropriate resolution of those feelings doesn't exist. I mean, I don't know, when do you decide that as a single person, right? I mean, you could have a relationship in your 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, all the way through your life. So again, I would generally say, help it push you towards being social, keep trying to be social. But if the data keeps saying to you, it's not going to happen, at some level, you do have to sort of just tell those feelings and work with those feelings and say, this is not an opportunity for me, and be sad about that, mm-hmm. and ask for help about that. I mean, loss, in my view, loss is the central purpose of the atonement. Mm. Whatever level of loss, for whatever reasons that we have loss, that its purpose is to help us work through that loss in a healthy way. And so I think you can draw on the atonement when you don't have opportunities that you've longed for, and things are you have to live without those things then and deal with that loss.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a question going back to your statement that we have these sex hormones, the highest the few months before marriage or before you're becoming sexually active, and then a little bit of time afterwards, right? And then they reduce. What happens if marriage or becoming sexually active isn't in the picture? Is there an age when they reduce naturally on their own, that you're just not ever going to be at this high point again?
Excellent question. That is actually absolutely true. So, for example, a 25-year-old man has twice as much testosterone as a 50-year-old man. Mm. And so his natural energy around sexuality is substantially less at 50 than it was at 25. And he hasn't done anything to cause that. It's just the way the body ages. Estrogen is a little more complicated than testosterone because of the menstrual system. And it's more of a cyclical thing, monthly. And then menopause is the big unknown. Like, is menopause going to increase sexual energy or decrease sexual energy? And the reason it could actually increase is because estrogen and testosterone work together. And some women, when they stop menstruating, the estrogen reduces, their testosterone proportionally is actually higher. So then they have a little more energy sexually, strangely enough. It's not most women, but a significant percentage of women do experience a difference in their sexual energy after menopause. But the point is, as you say, aging is going to generally affect sexual energy in a negative direction.
Okay.
That you're going to feel less of the hormonal intensity, both males and females, across the lifespan. So what that means is you have to learn to be sexual because you want to bond, not because you feel the libido that you used to feel. And many couples don't make that shift.
Really?
And this is not the topic of masturbation necessarily, but they don't realize, they keep waiting for the bodies to lead them into the sexual experience, but the body is aging and the body isn't participating anymore the way it used to. And so, but you can stimulate oxytocin through a wide variety of activities that are not sexual in nature, and they get you feeling closer to your partner, and then you engage in those close activities, and then a libido kind of increases post-oxytocin levels. And so you have sex for a different reason, from a different energy than you do when you're younger. And if you don't make that transition, you stop having sex in middle age and your relationship withers and dies for lots of couples because they're still waiting for their bodies to do the work for them.
So for older couples, I'm hearing then, their sex drive is lower, but it's really important for them to go ahead and do those real connecting, emotionally connecting types of activities along with touch that might not even be sexual touch to get that oxytocin moving. And then the libido tends to go up with the sex hormones. Is that correct?
That's correct. And you don't have to wait to be sexual. You don't have to feel sexual energy to be sexual. Right. And you need the touch and the connection and the oxytocin. And so you just learn to come at it from the opposite side of the, I want to be close to my partner. I want to feel close. I want to share. And then trust through those feelings rather than I feel like let's have fun. You know, that's sort of the kind of energy. It comes from a different direction.
Yeah, that's interesting, especially as I'm getting older and older. Interesting.
Yeah, we all are. Everybody.
So I want to come back just for a minute and talk about, we've established this nice spectrum and, you know, moving towards a relationship versus being fairly selfish and it's all about me. And put in here the context of, I hate the term worthiness, but unfortunately, a lot of times young people that you see, young people that I see, will maybe go into their bishop and confess that there's some problems that they're experiencing with masturbation. And from what I understand, there's some religious leaders or bishops that really come down hard. They lose a temple recommend, and there's just a real crunch and maybe quite a bit of fear and shame associated with confessing this. And with others, it's just like, oh, that's normal, just move on. Where do we come on the spectrum with how should we respond to this in a position, if we had a position of religious or ecclesiastical, you know, judgment for these people or to help them?
Right. These are really hard questions.
Yeah.
Because of course, when a person is in an ecclesiastical role, they have a stewardship. And it's their responsibility to sort of feel the spirit out and decide, with this particular individual, I need to be a little more firm. And this particular individual, I need to be more merciful, or however we want to pitch that, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to respect that spiritual insight and that stewardship. And yet, if you read the current church policies and principles about this, there is no mention of masturbation in any of them.
Really?
At this point. Even the Strength of the Youth one, which used to have the statement about don't do anything, has softened into a general principle. It's still really clear that we need to avoid pornography, and that the purpose of these powers, procreative powers, is for marriage and all that. Those principles are all still in there, but these statements about masturbation are no longer part of this. This doesn't mean that this is fine. We can now just do whatever we want. It just means that this is an area that there's going to be need for progress and growth and understanding and flexibility, and that we ought to manage this in a pretty careful way. We probably ought to not think about this in the same category as we think about fornication and adultery, mm-hmm. and, you know, other kinds of things that are, you know, risking births and, mm-hmm. and affairs and all kinds of other things, that masturbation is sort of a different category, isn't it? And so what I talk to a number of leaders and ecclesiastically, sometimes they have me come and work with them as groups and sometimes as individuals. And I always tell them that, you know, you've got to think about sexuality the same way you think about every other physical characteristic we learn in life. You're going to have a period of time where you make a lot of mistakes. Because when I learned to walk as a baby, as a young child, I fall and I hit my head, I scratch my face. Everybody knows with a toddler, they feel like people are going to accuse them of being abusive to their child. They get all these bruises all the time because mm-hmm. the kid is struggling to get this body to do what he tells it to. Well, somehow we stop thinking like that about our bodies when we go through puberty for some reason, that somehow a 12-year-old should have an immediate ability to control all of these sexual feelings and manage that without bruises and batters and, mm-hmm. and scars. Well, that's just not the way it works. And so they're going to have experiences with their bodies. They're going to do some masturbation stuff. We know actually that the majority of them are participating in this to some degree. Mm-hmm. And so we ought to sort of think about that the same way. If the child is running out in the street, we holler and we jump and we keep them from getting run over. And that's more of the extreme kind of sexual stuff that we're talking about. But they're stumbling. We help them. We help them learn how to walk better. We protect their environment. We teach them. Tie your shoes, for example. You don't want to have untied shoes. They're going to make you fall. Well, maybe that's something like masturbation. You know, let's not keep doing this thing. It's like running around with our shoes untied. We're going to keep faltering. Let's think about another option here. But we wouldn't harshly punish a child for not tying their shoes. They're going to learn fallen on their head. You know, a lot of things are going to happen. And so, I mean, I think you want to think about these early experimentations with the body and puberty as that sort of an idea. And of course, you want to keep out the porn and the other things that begin to stimulate in different ways that are outside of marriage. And they, of course, teach sexuality that's very distorted right. and destructive. And so you keep those things out and you help them learn to predict what turns them on, to understand their bodies, to be flexible with themselves, to appreciate they have a body. These are great feelings. It's going to take a while to figure out how to manage this. Be reasonable with yourself. And leaders should be reasonable and parents should be reasonable. There shouldn't be freaking out about this kind of stuff. It's just not helpful. You can't scare a kid out of masturbating. You can't do it. It's just knocking them away. You're going to have to present to them other things, other ways of thinking about it, other ways of being, and be patient with them over time. And they can grow out of that and learn to control these things in an adult way as they become adults. But you're not going to be able to say, you know, this is a sinful thing and you're going to hell and therefore you better stop. That is not going to help. Mm-mm. It's just not.
Not at all. That breeds a lot of shame. And when you're ashamed, you just hide. And then you get in a whole lot of other problems. I sent you a list of questions and I'm not talking about any of them because this is so interesting. I'll ask you one more question before we wrap up, but I'm just curious and I'm putting you on the spot. I realize that. But if you had an opportunity to speak at General Conference and you could tell the whole church, you know, something important about sexuality and teaching sexuality or being sexual, what message would be really, really important to you to make sure people understood?
Yeah, that is a tough one. It's we don't have many, if any, talks on this topic.
I know. I hope it changes sometime.
Well, there may be some reasons for that. I mean, part of what I think of when you've just said that is most of these kinds of conversations, I think, are most well suited for close relationships. Mm-hmm. And as you can see, there's many things that I've said that people could interpret in a wide variety of ways
totally.
And get upset about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would want people to appreciate that their sexual, their bodies, their sexual feelings, their sexual body parts, their sexual experiences are one of the greatest gifts that God has given us. And they have so much potential and power to create some of the most amazing experiences in life. But with that sort of power comes struggles. It's going to take us a while to get it right. Even if we do everything technically right, we wait for marriage and it's going to take us a while. And then as soon as we get it right, our bodies are going to change, our relationships are going to change, kids are going to come along. It's just a moving target. So give yourself space to be a lifelong learner with regard to managing sexual feelings, but always trying to find a way to feel that it is a gift, even the struggle mm-hmm. when it's not working or it's not available, that struggle is part of the gift of these appetites and these passions are learning that our bodies are powerful, learning that we can eventually be in charge of our bodies in healthy, harmonious ways, and that we can learn love and connection with our bodies in just amazing ways that are not available to spirits. But it's hard to hang on to those attitudes because we fight these bodies, we get anxious about them, we get guilt and shame about them. And it's so easy to turn this to, I hate these feelings, mm-hmm. I dislike part of my life. Why do I have these feelings? And so it gets twisted and turned in ways that are just so distressing to me because it is one of the most beautiful parts of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the last piece about the, you know, what to a religious audience is I think God is so interested in helping us out about this. He gave us these gifts and he wants us to be successful at them, even if it takes 15 years. Or 20 or whatever. He wants us to find a way to get this better in our lives. And he will help us. So rather than have it push you away from God, have it push you towards him and asking for that help and trusting that it will come and appreciating the little steps that he helps you make to get this better. Mm.
That is so beautiful. I can't wait to hear that talk. So, all right, you know this is the Live Your Why podcast, and I always like to wrap up the podcast by asking my guests to tell us a little bit about your why. So, Dean Busby, can you share with us your why?
You know, it's funny. I'm a person that researches and studies meaning in relationships and in life. And I don't spend a lot of time thinking about that big why. I just had a sort of innate trust. I had good parents who helped me appreciate that I'm a unique person who can find ways to contribute good in this world and trust that God will help me figure that out. And so not overthink it, not overwork it, just move forward, follow these energies and these passions and these interests and pray about them and work at them and trust that it will turn out to be something that has a value to people that I care about and to others in this world. And so my why is, I mean, I'm so committed to this idea of understanding your passions, embracing them and following them to a good outcome. I mean, I think that's really driving a lot of my life. Mm-hmm. And I hope it keeps driving my life until it's over, that, you know, what matters to me? What do I'm feeling? What is the thing I'm passionate about now? Find a space and way to chase that down and to try to make a difference with it and trust that it'll be what needs to happen.
Yeah. So. I love that. That's beautiful. Thank you so much for being on our podcast today. This has been so interesting to me, and I know that the listeners will also appreciate your messages. So thank you, Dean, so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.